From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As you know by now, an Independence Day parade yesterday became the latest entry in our country's sad register of mass shootings. Police say a man fired on parade-goers in Highland Park from the roof of a business. At least six people are dead. Some two dozen more were injured. Police say they took the alleged shooter into custody 8 hours later. Here are some of the witness accounts shared with Chicago area television stations.
He reloaded, and then that's when I grabbed my son, and I ran around the corner, and I put him in a dumpster, a garbage dumpster, and I asked some people to stay there with him, because I had to go back to find the rest of my family. And when I went back, there was people shot on the ground.
So the sirens were blaring. It was very hard to hear, but we heard people screaming, shots fired, shots fired.
It's just crazy, and all I thought about is just, you know, getting my daughter to safety, and I ran with her. We went to the nearest McDonald's, and, you know, she lost her shoe along the way, my daughter, and she was, you know, she was scared. All I wanted her is to be safe.
At least two of the victims have been identified publicly. North Shore Congregation Israel Synagogue confirms longtime staffer Jackie Sundheim was shot. Another family said they lost their patriarch, Nicholas Toledo. The 78-year-old from Mexico was spending time in Illinois visiting some of his eight children and grandchildren. We are going to spend today's show talking about what's happened, what's ahead in the investigation, and the political fallout and policy ramifications of this tragedy. And a note, you are going to hear descriptions of violence in our show today. Joining us on the line is Rick Atterbury. He and his family live in Highland Park. They were a block from the shooting. They are fine, or at least as fine as one can be after something like this. And Rick, thank you for joining us today on the 21st Show.
Good morning, Brian.
Also with us is Michael Puente. He's a reporter for Chicago NPR station WBEZ. He spent yesterday covering the injured. Michael, thank you for being with us as well.
Well, thank you for having me.
Also joining us is Lori Post. She's a professor and director of the Buehler Center for Health Policy and Economics at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine, specializes in injury control. And Lori, thank you for joining us again on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, we're also going to be sharing text messages many of you sent in the wake of this shooting. You can also join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Rick, I want to begin with you. Can you just tell us where you and your family were yesterday when the parade started?
Sure. We actually live just two blocks from Central Street where the shooting occurred. So we went down to the parade about 9:30 because the children's parade begins at 9:30. And thank goodness this shooting did not occur during the children's parade. We were just to the right of the viewing stand, and that put us about 55 yards from where the shooter was, and about 15 to 20 yards from where some of the victims fell.
Wow. That's, 55 yards, it's half a football field away.
Exactly.
So when, tell me, what was happening when you first heard the shots? What went through your mind?
When we first heard the shots, the parade had, a few units had gone by, but not too many. The police and fire had already gone by and the high school band, which was very fortunate. We heard a series of loud noises, and about halfway, probably 15 or 16. And about halfway through that, my wife and I realized at the same time, these are not fireworks. I think the people around us, some of them thought there were fireworks since we were close to the reviewing stand. I think a few people thought, oh, okay, these are salutes of some kind as the flag goes by. And about halfway through that first volley, we started to realize, no, I have some experience with guns, and it was the deep-throated and very, very regular cadence of a semi-automatic weapon. And we immediately got up and headed back around the corner toward the street that we live on. By the time there was a pause after the first volley, not terribly long, it would appear that the shooter was reloading or changing a clip. And there was another volley, which also seemed to be 15 or 16 shots, the whole crowd got up, started to move away toward the east. We got around our corner and started toward our, we were lucky. I mean, people were separated from their families. They were separated from their cars. We knew we just had to go two blocks to get home. We were halfway home when a friend of ours who was staying with us and I encountered a man who was bleeding profusely from his head. He said, "I'm okay, it's just a graze wound." We gave him some tissue and a police car was going by, headed toward Central Street at the time. I sort of jumped out in front of him, flagged him down and said, "We've got an injured one right here," and he took it from there.
So I understand, and thank you for sharing that. I can't imagine what that must have been like. I understand that, and we know law enforcement asked people to shelter in place. So you made it home. What happened then? How did you and your family mark the time?
We made it home, and in the mass confusion at the beginning, of course, I mean, we turned on the media right away. Well, they're not going to have it immediately, but within about 20 minutes they had, and we started to get information by way of the media that people anywhere near downtown should shelter in place. We'd already sort of figured that out. We shut all the, we're on the first floor of a condo unit. We shut all the blinds and stayed away from the windows and just sort of sat it out then until the suspect was captured about 8 hours later.
And have you been able to talk to any of your neighbors since this? How are they holding up?
Yes, we had a friend who was actually shot, taken to the hospital. She was shot in the face, and bullet went in under her chin and is still there. She was treated and released. She's home right now, but they will be doing surgery later once the swelling is down to remove that bullet. Other neighbors here in the condo, some of them were across the street from us. They took off in a different direction. Some were down on the other side of where the shooter was. And we met them when we got to the lobby. Everybody was pretty shaken. You have it in the back of your mind. I had some training in emergency management, was a volunteer for 20 years. And when we got there, I was looking around and I'm thinking, okay, what occurred to me was that in the wake of the Waukesha parade violence, where the suspect drove the car into the crowd, I kind of expected there'd be dump trucks and garbage trucks blocking the side streets, and they weren't. That was the concern I kind of had in the back of my mind. I didn't really think about a shooter here in Highland Park.
Well, I'm sorry you went through that, and I thank you for sharing it with us
today.
Let me just take a moment to remind our listeners, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the shooting in Highland Park yesterday. We're speaking with Rick Atterbury, and I want to bring now into the conversation Michael Puente, who's a reporter from WBEZ, who is covering some of the wounded yesterday. Before we do, I do want to play a piece of tape. This is from a video someone was taking of the parade. Listeners, I've got to warn you, this is disturbing, but I and we at the show think it's important to hear this and to do as much as we can to, at least for one moment, face the reality of what the people along the parade route were experiencing. Let's listen to this. Right, 3 seconds, 11 shots, another moment goes by, another 23 shots as I counted it. Mike, I understand you spent the day at North Shore Hospital. How many people were treated there? What was the extent of their injuries?
There was at least 27 people who were taken to that hospital, and there's a few others at the surrounding hospitals. Well, a lot of gunshot wounds, puncture wounds, injuries, you name it. And they were there. It's a level 1 trauma center, so that's why they sent them there. And it's The doctors went into high gear. They brought in some additional resources. They said they had about an extra 20 doctors and 20 nurses all treating people with all various injuries, and but that they're trained for this. They're trained for this kind of trauma. Nobody expects something like this to happen, though, on 4th of July. So, but they, you know, they went into action.
There's a wide age range of the victims. We heard about grandfather, Nicholas Toledo, who was murdered. What can you tell us about the youngest victim?
Well, I understand there was the youngest victim is about 6 years old, and that person is now being treated at the Comer Children's Hospital in Chicago. Not more too much about that, but that at some point they decided to move them there to the Children's Hospital.
All right. For people who maybe don't know Highland Park, Rick, I want to ask you, this is a city of 30,000 people. It's in Lake County, southern Lake County, right along the Cook County border, along the shore of Lake Michigan, about 25 miles north of downtown Chicago. Rick, how long have you lived there? What else can you tell us about the community?
Sure. We've lived here about a year and a half. We moved up from Champaign after retirement. Our children are nearby in Evanston. It is an absolutely wonderful community. It's yes, it's one of the high tax areas, but in our brief experience here, there's a lot of return for that in terms of the way the city operates, the park district. The quality of life is very high, and the people are friendly. The folks here in the condo complex embraced us. They're all a little older than we are, and it just worked out fine. It's a town that's heavily Jewish, and there have been incidents in the past. There were threats against a few synagogues back in April, and there's been one of those incidents of the folks who feel that they need to put literature in a baggie and drive by with rock, you know, that has rocks in it, throw it up on people's doorsteps, that sort of thing. But the town itself is, it's a very nice community here along Lake Michigan.
So after the suspect was taken into custody, have you been able to go outside? I wonder what is it like in Highland Park today?
Yeah, the downtown is still cordoned off. The street in front of our building is closed. I was able to go out and gas up the car this morning, but the downtown is still off limits for everyone. Yesterday, there wasn't a soul anywhere after the order to stay put was issued. People really did obey it. Today, there is very little traffic. The train station is just across the street. Since it is a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday are the big commuting days in this post-COVID world, and the parking lot's full. But downtown is just, it's eerily quiet anywhere from here to downtown.
And Mike, you were, as we said earlier, you were at North Shore Hospital. I understand you later drove to Highland Park. What did neighbors in the area tell you about what was happening there?
Well, a lot of it kind of repeating what Richard is saying, just a very surreal situation. I talked to a woman who was visiting her sister-in-law in Highland Park for the parade. She's actually from Atlanta, and she says she usually likes going there because it's a nice, quiet, beautiful area. And you know, a little bit after the parade started, you started hearing those gunshots, and just sent everybody scrambling. She even got separated from her family for a little bit, and it's just something you just don't expect, just terrifying in a beautiful suburb north of Chicago. And it's some of the other neighbors that I talked to much later in the evening outside the police station, just it felt things were starting to, I wouldn't say return to normal, but there was a calmness there, people talking to each other, just trying to sort of console each other in what happened earlier in their town. And a lot of people are saying you're just not going to feel the same way again, that this may have shattered their sense of safety, especially on a 4th of July.
All right, we're going to need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Michael Puente of WBEZ and Rick Atterbury, who's a resident of Highland Park, who witnessed and survived yesterday's deadly mass shooting at the 4th of July parade. We're also going to bring Lori Post from Northwestern University into our conversation. Listeners, we do want to hear from you. If you have a perspective on what happened yesterday, if you have a perspective on attending public events in this era of mass shootings and other attacks on members of the public. We heard from John in our text messaging group who said, you just have to accept that this is the miserable state of affairs that a certain sector of American society has hoped and longed for. Franny texted us, for the most part, I do feel safe attending public gatherings. The odds of being involved in a mass shooting are really very small. However, the fact that this is even a possibility, or the fact, I should say, the fact that this possibility even exists is unbelievable. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. More when we return. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about yesterday's mass shooting at a 4th of July parade in Highland Park, Illinois. We're speaking with Rick Atterbury, who's a resident of Highland Park, witnessed and survived the shooting. We're also speaking with WBEZ Chicago reporter Michael Puente, who covered some of the victims yesterday. And I want to bring Lori Post into the conversation now. She's professor and director of the Buehler Center for Health Policy and Economics at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. And Lori, maybe just as a baseline for our conversation, I do want to talk about the alleged perpetrator of this, but what are some of the basic guidelines that people in your field recommend for the media when talking about people who carry out mass shootings?
That's a really great question. Thank you for asking that. I think that this is what we know. The objective of the mass shooter is to kill as many people as possible and to get famous. And so for journalists and media covering horrific crimes like this, it's really important not to glorify that person, not to use their name, not to give them a title or a name tag, because that's what they're seeking. And we want to suck the oxygen right out of that.
So yesterday, Northwestern has a very shrewd communications department, and they sent out sort of a Q&A from you, and you did aptly predict some of the markers that we would see here. Can you just talk about, what the patterns are we've been seeing with not only this incident but other ones, and how that might inform a policy response?
Sure. So the first thing that I noticed, just from my personal research that I've done and from reading other people's research, is that mass shooters need a big gun. They need assault rifles and large capacity magazines to kill multiple people, and in a single setting. So my guess was that there would be some sort of a military style type of weapon that would be used. The other thing is that mass shooters are disproportionately white males. And then because the setting was at a parade, I think parades are more where, kids like to go to parades and their families. So I assumed it would be a young person, even though I understand that he killed, some old people as well, too. Just the fact that there's a lot of young people around, he wanted to terrorize that group, means he's probably more comfortable with younger people.
And that is a trend we've seen in these shootings, is younger and younger people.
You see mass shooters that go into schools, they're almost always young persons that do it. And then people who go into, government buildings, workplaces, tend to be older mass shooters.
Mike Puente, I know you need to leave us and move on with your reporting for today. What are you going to be watching for in the hours and days ahead as you're following this story?
Well, definitely taking a look more at the suspect, his background, who did he deal with. Corey was talking a little bit, it's not to glorify him at all, but it's just to get a better understanding of how this happened, what were some of the telltale signs. We're already hearing reports of some of the videos that his rap videos that he would put up with some really troubling imagery. And you got to wonder, like, how are those sort of signs or warning signs can be put up without anybody saying anything. But we're also going to be focusing on the victims. We're going to start hearing more about the stories behind the victims. And we're already hearing two of them, and one older gentleman just, you know, visiting his family from Mexico. And just, I think we're going to have to brace ourselves for just more tragic news. People were just going to a 4th of July parade this happens. But, obviously, hopefully Highland Park will bounce back. I mean, it's a great community from what I tell. And unfortunately, this is happening all around the country. And how's it going to solve itself? That's who knows?
Yeah, we'll have to see about that. Michael Puente from WBEZ, thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
Lori Post, I want to come back to you about these videos, right? I mean, there's certainly, this is a country of 330 million people. There are certainly more people posting disturbing videos than who are actually carrying out mass murders. How do people who, you know, maybe their nephew did post a strange video online, how should people think about that?
Well, here's the thing is that I think that posting videos of killing, bleeding out, is one thing, or posting pictures of himself wearing military, armwear and nighttime fatigues and carrying an assault weapon is really alarming. And that's very different than something that's immature. We all know kids, we all have kids who posted inappropriate things online. That's very different than somebody who's fantasizing about committing violent acts, or fantasizing about how he would die by a police officer, or how he would kill other people. So anytime anybody has somebody who's posting these images, but trying to make themselves more, macho, manly, masculine, is very alarming and should be reported. And it just seems that social media companies like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of them should screen for these types of photos. I'm sure that there's a great data mining that can be done that can process, millions of these records on an ongoing basis, that they should just be removed immediately and alert authorities, because this person is a high-risk person. That's not normal.
I want to turn now to some of the public official reaction we've heard in Illinois. Governor J.B. Pritzker traveled to Highland Park yesterday evening. He made comments. This is before the alleged perpetrator had been captured. So keep that in mind in the context of what he's saying. But let's take a listen to part of what he had to say.
You know what I love about 4th of July? We celebrate the founding of this wonderful nation by gathering with family and friends and enjoying parades and fireworks. Our cameras on days like this are filled with messy faces and reckless smiles and pretty sunsets, an effort to bottle up that unique feeling of sun-filled joy. That's what evil took from us today. That's what gun violence robs us of, no matter the neighborhood or the city it erupts in. If you're angry today, I'm here to tell you, be angry. I'm furious. I'm furious that yet more innocent lives were taken by gun violence. I'm furious that their loved ones are forever broken by what took place today. I'm furious that children and their families have been traumatized. I'm furious that this is happening in communities all across Illinois and America. I'm furious because it does not have to be this way. And yet we as a nation, well, we continue to allow this to happen. While we celebrate the 4th of July just once a year, mass shootings have become our weekly, yes, weekly, American tradition.
Rick, I wonder if you have a response to what the governor had to say yesterday.
I was just thinking that I saw him make that speech yesterday, and he's right on. It's time to be angry. Highland Park, ironically, has a long history of being proactive about trying to control the proliferation of assault weapons, of automatic weapons. Back in 2014, they had a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court before the Supreme Court remanded it to lower court for a city ban on assault weapons. A couple of weeks ago, after Uvalde, there was a big rally, an anti-gun, anti-violence rally. And at this moment, at the Art Center, about three blocks from here, it's the front yard is draped in orange in memory of the victims of gun violence. So it's an issue that even as peaceful as this town has been up to now, has been at the forefront of a lot of people in this area. And it is very sad that it came to roost in the way that it did. But I may make people angry, but the time for thoughts and prayers was several of these shootings ago. We've got to do something.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that, because I also want to play a bit of what Republican gubernatorial nominee and state senator Darren Bailey had to say. He was with supporters a very short distance away in Skokie, planning to march in that city's 4th of July parade. When their parade was canceled, he posted a video to Facebook. I have to say the sound quality is not great here. This is what he posted. Let's take a listen.
And we're just going to take a moment and pray for the families. Friends, let's pray for the law enforcement and even the organizers of this parade. They've done an amazing job. There's a lot of confusion and frustration that the parade's being canceled, but they did the right thing because people's safety has got to come first. The shooter is still at large, so let's pray for justice to prevail. And then let's move on and let's celebrate the independence of this nation. We know the mission. We have got to get corruption and evil out of our government, and we have got to elect men and women of honor and of courage to get this country and this state back on track.
So Bailey has an expansive view of gun rights. Some of his campaign merchandise features an image of a pistol with the words, "Void the Foid." He supports eliminating the firearm owner's identification card, which is required legally to own a gun in Illinois. And his comments, especially the part about let's move on and celebrate, that came in for a lot of criticism. He later issued a statement adding, "I'm heartbroken by today's tragic events and the pain and loss felt by so many. My intent was to pray for the victims and those affected by today's tragedy and for the shooter to be caught and prosecuted without further loss. I apologize if in any way we diminish the pain being felt across our state today. I hope we can all come together in prayer and action to address rampant crime and mental health issues to make sure these horrific tragedies don't happen again." Rick, I wonder if you had any reaction to those comments.
Well, this is the guy who had a television commercial with a high-powered weapon of some sort blowing up a target during his campaign. I think the first statement before they softened it is that's where he's coming from, and people who think like that. And it's a very dramatic change from what happened up here, where he's saying, he's saying thoughts and prayers, and I'm sure he's sincere about calling, for the support for the law enforcement and the first responders and for care for the victims. But, when I heard him say that, the last part I heard was, okay, now let's party. And up here, and immediately, the parades that were supposed to start in the suburbs, and especially the north suburbs, within a half hour or an hour of the Highland Park parade, all canceled. Fireworks shows, all canceled. This was not the time to let's get on with celebrating. Celebrating was just inappropriate.
I want to read another text message we got from a listener. I want to remind listeners, actually, that you can join us at 800-222-9455 as we speak with Rick Atterbury. who is a resident of Highland Park, who witnessed and survived yesterday's mass shooting, and Lori Post from Northwestern University. This person, Randy, suggested an approach here might be to look at placing liability with the bullet. Who provided the funds to buy the bullets? Who bought the bullets? Who sold the bullets? A dozen more individual liable agents. Forget about the gun. Face general liability tests. Lori Post, I'm going to ask you just in if you want to address that specifically or just in a general way about what sort of public policy response you might want to see from our elected officials.
Here's the thing is that we already know what works. Why are we playing around and looking at other things or looking to fund other endeavors that we don't know that would work, probably don't have any effect whatsoever? So from 1994 to 2004, we had a federal assault weapons ban that included a prohibition of large capacity magazines. And during that, when that ban was in place, we saw mass shootings go down to almost nothing. And had that ban stayed in place, we would have eliminated, I estimate, at least 30 more mass shootings between 2004 and 2019. That would have prevented 340 some people from dying, more than 1,000 people from being shot and injured. So we know it works. Not only does my research find this, but several other researchers have studied the assault weapons ban, and they found similar outcomes, a lower lethality, lower number of assault or mass shootings in themselves. And then again, we have other countries we can look at as well too, such as like Australia that had a mass shooting in 1996 that killed 34 people in Tasmania. And their government immediately followed up with a ban on assault rifles and rifles in general. And what happens? It resulted in mass shootings going down to nothing. So we know what works. We don't need to poke around for anything. We don't need to really study it. Specifically, if we want to stop mass shootings, which is where four or more individuals die in a single event, then we need to implement an assault weapons ban. And it cannot be state by state. It has to be national because we're only as good as our weakest link. So we have some policies that are good in Illinois. However, if you don't like those policies, you can drive to Wisconsin, Iowa, or Ohio in a couple of hours and get your gun someplace else. So we need to have national policy that would enforce an assault weapons ban.
All right, we need to take another break. Lori Post, I think I'm gonna let you go at this point in the conversation. I want to thank you for being with us today. Lori Post is professor and director of the Buehler Center for Health Policy and Economics at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
And Rick Atterbury, if you can stick around, I'm going to ask you to do so. And listeners, if you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with Cynthia Lubin-Langtu, a professor in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Longtime listeners will know we have had her on many times in the past to talk about mental health, particularly in the wake of traumatic incidents like this one. 800-222-9455 is the number again. 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.